This episode is sponsored by Bigger Bash, Bigger City's 25th anniversary celebration in Las Vegas this year, September 6th through September 8th at the Palms Casino. Tickets are on sale now, and we'll hope to see you there.
And welcome to the Big Fat Gay Podcast, where we talk about the things that are weighing on our minds. I'm Dan Oliverio, author, public speaker, and chubby chaser. Today, I am a blissed out chubby chaser. I'm very happy. It's a very relaxing Sunday. I have just the few little tiny things to do on my Sunday, and I don't even have to do them. God, that feels good.
That's a, yes.
That's the best. Yeah. Feeling.
I'm Trevor Keeson. I'm a super chub, and I'm a Sunday boy. It's Sunday. I'm ready to do some chores, and I want to do them. I want to.
This does not bode well for me.
Right. This sounds like brainwashing.
This sounds like I have a to-do list.
No. Hi, my name is Michael Willer. I am a chubby chaser. And I also am going to enjoy the hell out of this weekend. I didn't get back from work until yesterday morning, so I'm making the most of the one full weekend day I get. I'm going to play games, damn it.
Yes.
As soon as this podcast is over, games all day long.
Hey there, my name's Don. I'm a big chubby guy living here in sunny Hollywood. And today I am a hot chocolate aficionado. I have this lovely, my chai hot chocolate sitting next to me with an accidental overdose of sugar in there. So I may be the one bringing the energy today, yes. Everybody.
Turbo sweet.
Turbo sweet. For the first 32 minutes and then
crash. By the time we get to the bit, I'm just going to be asleep.
So welcome to the show, everybody. We want to thank, obviously, our patrons on Patreon for continuing to support the show. We also want to thank Bearskin for being an affiliate along with Big Fig. I know somebody who's about to buy a Big Fig mattress. I am also about to buy a Big Fig mattress. So we're
you're doing it.
It's about to happen.
You're going to be happy. I love my Big Fig.
We also want to thank Bigger Bash for sponsoring the show. Bigger Bash is in Las Vegas, September 6th to September 8th, put on by the people at Bigger City. It's like a little mini, it's not the same as Bigger Vegas. I think they're trying to distinguish those things, but it is a little sort of weekend get together for the Chub Chaser community. It's going to be lots of fun. It's at the Palms Casino, which I just went and did a walkthrough of. Super cool.
Oh, good.
There's actually if you're registered for Bigger Bash on the Bigger City app, you can like go to this group chat and it's fun. There's it's a new thing and it's very fun and people are very excited and sharing tips about like what they're going to do in Vegas. And I think it's worth checking out if you're registered. It's
for sure.
It's a neat little thing.
We're going to be there. I think we're still figuring out exactly who, what configuration, but we do have a little bit more confirmation on.
We will what have kind presence. Of,
we will have presence and we will have confirmation on exactly what we'll be able to do there. I think within the next couple of months, it's okay. Very exciting. We have more opportunity than we realized. So we're going to plan something cool for everybody.
Yay.
Yay.
I have a request for our listeners. Another request. I mean, you do so much and I'm asking more of you. Look at me. This month, NAFA is doing Monthly Giving May. We have launched a monthly giving program called the NAFA Pod, standing for Passionate Ongoing Donors. And we have a very generous donor who has offered to give up to $10,000 if we reach 100 monthly donors registered this month. So you can give $5, like that's what, like a grande caramel macchiato.
It's a hell of a deal. People love a good deal. You give some amount, gets added onto.
Yes. Yeah, that's really awesome. I like this because it's like a matching grant, but instead of matching the dollars, they're not matching the dollars. They're saying if you get 100 subscribers, 100 new subscribers,
that's wonderful.
You get the money.
So you know, for the price of a caramel macchiato a month, you can help us
fight the people that are going to give you glares when you buy that caramel macchiato.
Yes. And help NAFA fight for fat rights, build fat community online and offline, and change the media's narratives about fat lives and celebrate fat people who are making a better world. NAFA is doing a lot of work and it is, it takes money. It takes those caramel macchiatos to keep the globe spinning. So you can sign up to be a monthly donor at nafa.org/pod, P-O-D.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And now I put in outline saxophones. Right?
Womp, womp.
There we go. Yeah, first up, we have a story that I'm very curious to hear Trevor explain, because I don't 100%, like, I know Trevor has baggage with Harry Potter, but in the express.co.uk entertainment section.
A listener actually sent a video of this, and I had to research, like, what the hell is going on with this?
I love this so much. I love this so much.
In London, to celebrate and the opening of a new exhibit at the Harry Potter kind of behind the scenes tour thing.
And at the Warner Brothers studio, they're having a new tour called Back to Azkaban, or Return to Azkaban.
Oh, okay.
And to celebrate this, they have created a giant floating effigy of Aunt Marge.
I think effigy is a bit strong, just floating balloon-like thing.
It is the most cursed. Like, I didn't really ever have any baggage with the whole Aunt Marge transformation inflation thing until I saw this.
So for anybody who has somehow missed the Harry Potter movies and books, the scene is that Harry is being berated by Aunt Marge, who's sort of this bully figure, and he accidentally casts a spell on her, which causes her to inflate much like a large Macy's parade style balloon and fly out into the sky and disappear. And they've done exactly this somehow for some reason.
So there is a lot of fat phobic stuff in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Just and, like, isolating the current transphobia coming from J.K. Rowling, which got to a point this weekend where Elon Musk replied to her and said, you know, I'm transphobic too, but this is basically a bit much. And why don't I agree with your views on gender and sexuality, but maybe consider tweeting something positive or just something else.
Said Elon Musk?
Yes.
Oh, man.
With Elon Musk doing an intervention on you? Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, so separate just from that, like, the J.K. Rowling, like, whatever, legacy, whatever. I never really considered the Aunt Marge thing to be, like, super fatphobic, because it's a more, like, body horror, inflation, whatever thing. But the fact that they're, like, how do we celebrate this air, you know, this window, this chapter of the Harry Potter saga?
Mm-hmm.
Let's create a giant floating fat woman and be, like, they break down the manpower that went into creation of the balloon, like, not just the, like, the
but let's be clear why. What they're trying to do is garner attention for their new exhibit. So basically they're thinking, what is there from the movie, the third movie, that is the biggest thing we could put in London? And Aunt Marge floating over London would be that thing. That does work. Also, they also make the point, because they have to do interviews, and they're talking about how, you know, when we did the Aunt Marge sequence, it was all these technicians. It wasn't CGI. It was all these people building and crafting and stunt doubles and all this stuff. So they're really looking at the movie magic. Why? Well, because they're a movie studio trying to get you to take their tour. So I get that. What I found very disappointing, though, was that Aunt Marge does not, in fact, float.
Yeah, she's hung from a crane.
Yeah. Well, she has to imagine the amount of helium that would have to be used.
Exactly.
To, like, it's the
scale. It's the scale. Because she's not just a balloon like Macy's Day Parade. It's actually a crafted heavy-duty costume. The thing weighs like 200 pounds. And it's clothing. It's the tweed suit. It's the hair. It's everything. So it's pretty darn heavy. And at that scale, because it's only about 20 feet high, only. The only way you couldn't, like you say, Michael, you couldn't get enough helium in the volume, you'd have to make it 100 feet high, and then they're like, okay, we're not spending that much money.
I don't remember having any particular, I mean, there's a lot of very fatphobic descriptors in Harry Potter just across the series.
I just remember his descriptions of the Dursleys constantly.
Oh, like, the Dursleys, whichever one of the Crab or Goyle who's the fat one.
Yeah, fat people, always common. The villain. Always.
Yeah. But for this, I don't know. I think much like Trevor, I didn't have any knee-jerk reactions, although I do feel like they make a point. I don't remember But I do feel like they make a point about her kind of mannishness in the books. So I don't know if that's
I'll be honest, like looking at the pictures that this article provides, I don't find anything especially insulting about
No, not at all. Like, it's very clearly a movie promotion. Yeah.
I find it whimsical and silly.
It is very cursed. I just imagine like some like, you know, lovely posh, like Bridget Jones-esque, like fat girl, like I'm good, you know. Like, today's going to be my day. Like, nothing's going to bring me down. And then just this shadow looms over her. And but she's, like, wearing the same outfit as Aunt Marge, like the Aunt Marge balloon or something. Like, I don't
think you can lay that at the feet of Warner Brothers. I think that's general fat phobia.
I just think this is, like, I think the thing that would
be a lot of fun would be to, like, release a horde of Dementors attached to balloons and just let them go from the Tower of London. Like, that would be fun.
It might be. Yeah. I think that would create more horror than curiosity, though.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I don't know. That's what Don's going for.
I feel horror looking at this. And Martin's like, this created, I don't know, something for me.
It is definitely a thing.
Yeah. And I don't know. Also, I think it is perfect that this weekend, Elon Musk is finally been like, actually, J.K. Rowling.
That's a bit much.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I have to look that up as soon as we're done with this.
So leaving, whipping wildly across the world to Australia, Fox Sports Australia has an article called, the quote starts with "World's gone mad." Greats, as in the AFL, great fume as AFL declares end of skinfold testing for draftees. So just to kind of set this up for people, the AFL is the Australian Football League. It is not the same as soccer. They say soccer in Australia generally. It is also not the same as American football, and it's also not the same as rugby. It's somewhere in the world of related sports, and apparently they've decided to end skinfold testing for their new draftees.
And to clarify, that's where they basically just pinch the fat and like use a caliper to measure it.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, and it has a long and sordid history, which
does
I'm happy to get into.
Provide any actual information?
Okay, so that was my thing. Can I just say, so skinfold or caliper testing is acknowledged, even for the people who are nuts about the subject, it is the least accurate form. There are three ways to test body fat. They're all bad, and skinfold is the worst as in terms of accuracy, because you have to take so many points. Okay, there's that. So number one, it's not terribly accurate. It's just convenient. Number two, as you say, Don, for what purpose? Because they say, you know, like, well, you know, they're eliminating skinfold testing, so they'll have less data on the athlete's fitness. But that's ridiculous. What makes you think that skinfolds is a measure of fitness? It's just the same fat medical nonsense that we've been hearing all over again. And then I realized, okay, they're not really just talking about like a fitness test. They're talking about diagnostic. For example, if they're not running fast enough, if they're not jumping high enough, they're trying to diagnose how they could improve. And so they're using body fat as a parameter, which again, though, that's kind of weak tea, because number one, the whole science of body composition is rather woolly to begin with. And so this idea that if they lost weight, they'd be a better athlete, that's just a flawed assumption. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just full of nonsense. But the important thing is that people are outraged we're trying to go against fat shaming because, as is so typical in the world of male sports, you should just suck it up.
Yeah.
Well, and this is following the removal of player weight information from the yearly season guide.
Oh, yeah. They published this shit.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so weird. And like, I would not expect Australia really to be like leading this kind of charge.
Yeah, exactly. It's strange.
And it just made me think it's so weird because it's so prevalent in so many sports around the world.
Yeah. The idolization, like there is a huge amount of idolization of physique in athletes. Like my area of expertise in sports is soccer, obviously. And, you know, kind of the two pillars of soccer for the last two decades have been Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. And Lionel Messi is kind of the short you know, short, like lesser statured one. And Cristiano Ronaldo is like the Adonis. And a lot of Ronaldo's followers are obsessed with his physique. They try and match the physique. He has this very active Instagram profile, all of these shirtless pictures. He has famous goal celebrations where he just takes his shirt off and like flexes. Like, it's a whole thing. And so I think even though that you don't want the players in the AFL in this case to be suffering, you know, fat shaming and all of these sort of mental health issues that come along with that while they're being selected, you also don't want to reinforce what your audience is tying into in a negative way, which would be like the physique and all of that stuff. Like, like admire them on their merits. For instance, there's a player, again, a soccer player that I really enjoy, is a controversial figure, Luis Suarez, who's built like a tank. Like, he's a forward. He's like 6'2". You can't knock him over, but people always make fun of him for being quote unquote fat because he's not as fast. But like, his physique serves him in other ways, and it always works. He's one of the greatest strikers of all time. So like, it's just this rallying cry for a lot of like opposition fans to say, oh, he's fat. And I think this is not just trying to protect the players, but also trying to mitigate some of that crap.
Yeah. I think it's ridiculous that in a sport, I mean, it's a finite game. It's about winning. There are very measurable goals and results that constitute winning. And yet they're trying to say that looking like a winner is more important.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Well, I mean, come on. How much does that fuel merch sales?
You know? Yeah, like, that's true.
Yeah. Like, that's where their money comes from.
Yeah.
Like, of course they're going to do that.
Yeah. And the team wins, the player doesn't, and blah, blah, blah. But Michael's point about the two soccer players, and I don't know soccer, so I don't even remember their names. But anyway.
Anyway, so it's great to see this in Australia. I'm shocked that I don't know what branch of Fox News Incorporated actually decided to pick the story up. Nonsense Incorporated.
Well, they have the Fox Sports Department. They have a special show that's just about footy, apparently, which is Australian football. Yeah. The other thing I just want to put in here is, number one, it's not quite so surprising that it's Australia. Australia is really, it's an interesting mix of sort of European socialism and American, like, fuck you grit. Australia just provided a new, there's a new bill in the Australian Parliament. I think it might have just passed that as an employee, you are not obligated to pick up your phone from your employer after hours. You can do it if you want, but you're not like, you can't, it's not like an obligatory thing. So I think this sort of, this encouraging of a kinder, nicer, gentler world is very in keeping with where Australia is right now. And to be fair, where you see some of the biggest body dysmorphia and eating disorders in men and boys is in sports.
Yeah.
It's not the gay kid off in the corner as much as it is the kid who's in wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, do you hear that on the Australian wind coming to take us home?
You mean the didgeridoo?
It's Fat Watch 2024, baby.
That's right. Didgeridoos and rain sticks.
That's not an eagle. This is an eagle.
This is an eagle. Come on.
Please, Australian listeners, don't add us.
Australians, that is the one line that we all associate with Australia.
I am so excited about this.
Yes.
So it is Time 100 time.
Time magazine.
And yeah, this is cool.
So there's the Time 100, but then there's also like Time does 100 like other kind of specific categories. And in the Time 100 health, we have a very special person on that list. Tigris Osborne, executive director of NAFA, is one of the leaders in health because they have different categories of like catalysts, leaders, and in the leaders. Right next to Catwoman herself, Halle Berry, is Tigris Osborne, NAFA executive director. And there's this little
friend of the
feature
podcast
from Angela Haupt, I think is.
Yeah, Haupt.
Haupt.
Haupt or Haupt. H-A-U-P-T. You figure it out.
Interviewing Tigris. But it is just so, I am vibrating. I'm so excited. I'm so proud to be able to call Tigris a friend and a colleague and just to see her get recognition and be amongst all these other figures. It is so cool.
Tigris Osborne is the executive director for NAFA, the National Association for the Advancement of Fat Acceptance. And you're wondering, well, why would she be in Time's Health 100? And it's because of all the work that NAFA has been doing in combating fat phobia and anti-fat bias legislatively in places like New York City, trying, you know, getting laws passed so that it is not legal to discriminate against someone because they're too tall, too fat, too short.
So I was really surprised. I was a little surprised to see this, but I was delighted. But I was also curious, how are they contextualizing this as far as like the other people they've selected to be on this list? I don't know if you guys dug into this at all, but the group of scientists who paved the way for the invention of weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy are also on this list. And I'm kind of curious what, like, is this a conflict of interest? Is this just we're putting everybody relevant on here?
Time like, I mean, I know Time Persons of the Year is not the most beneficent contributor to the world. It's the person most in who's most contributed to conversation.
Yeah. Okay. And I think so, like, Don's point
Hitler
here is good.
Hitler was a person of the year for Time Magazine. So.
Got it. Interesting. I just thought it was, I was curious how they, who they had Tigris next to, which apparently Halle Berry was the other one.
And I think that is why it is so exciting to see included in this kind of just larger discussion of like, what's going on in health? What are the 100 most important things in health is fighting fat discrimination. And the just aspect of, you know, the Tigris talks about of like, you know, if you're fat and you can't get your blood pressure taken because the doctor doesn't have a blood pressure cuff that's large enough, like that's a problem. And we should be talking about these things before just trying to force people to get on these drugs.
Exactly.
And really pointing out that like a lot of these problems can't be solved by having great self-esteem. Like self-esteem is important, but you can't fix the fact that you can't get your blood pressure taken with self-esteem. Like, or there's actual things that,
or get an MRI for a diagnosis, you know, because you don't fit in the MRI machine, or the MRI machine doesn't fit you.
Yeah. All right.
Well, it's the week that this is coming up. We're very close to Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And just kind of in our pre-podcast call, we were having some conversations and realized we kind of had some stories relating to moms and how they impact our body image and just kind of the whole notion of like gay men and their relationship with their moms and stuff. And just given the time, we're like, let's kind of talk about this. And Michael, you had a story you wanted to share. Kind of,
I can get into that. It sounded like you wanted to say something.
No, I was say the other thing is that usually your first experience of food is through your mother. And so personal tastes, if I can just say, what you think of pork chops is really a mom thing. Yeah. How your mom made pork chops, how your mom made meatloaf influences pork chops and meatloaves for at least the next 20 years.
And if you doubt that, if you're a Gen Xer, think about Brussels sprouts. You know, Brussels sprouts when we were growing up were steamed by our parents or boiled. Yeah. And now they're delicious. They feel like,
well, they, like you can blend entire Brussels sprouts and make them good. You just, when you turn them to mush, it's you've gone
too far.
The point
is, it was an entire generation whose taste for Brussels sprouts were destroyed by our parents. So it shows a definite correlation.
This topic came up because my partner and I took a trip back to see his family and friends back east, and there's a bunch of stuff that happened. That's where we got kind of the stories about, you know, the travel that I think made it into the behind the scenes, but also, you know, we spent time with his mom, and I want to be clear up front, like I don't want to talk about this as a way of like slamming his mom. Like, she's lovely, she did her best. Like, I'm not trying to rag on her, but I also think these are important discussion points. So one of the ways that she kind of expresses like celebrates him coming back to visit is she makes lasagna, which she's sort of known for. The people that know her know that it's a special occasion when she makes lasagna. And so immediately food is contextualizing the visit instantly. Yeah. It's lasagna and then a dessert called dirt cake, which Dan will probably balk at.
Oh, but I love me.
Oh, but the name alone sounds so appetizing.
It's very, you know, it's very homegrown, like good old sweet stuff. And so these are the kind of the two things that she prepares, and then we go, and it's great. Now, I have a gluten intolerance that I don't particularly care to get into that much, but it means that if I'm going to sit down and eat like a full portion of lasagna, you know, I'm making a choice there that I will then pay for another day or two. Like I feel sick. I feel lethargic. I feel sleepy. My mood kind of swings a lot. It's just, it's not ideal. I can do that if we're just going to be there for a few hours for one day, but this visit was 2 days in a row. And so I kind of got to see like the second day. And it was very interesting because like day one, everything's very sort of happy clappy. Like we're there. Everybody's glad to see each other. Eat some lasagna, eat some jerk cake, hang out, whatever. And the second day we were, I don't know how this became the qualifier for late. The first day we showed up at 11 a.m. because we're on West Coast time, right? So there's some jet lag. Day two, we show up at like 12 p.m., like an hour later than that, but no set time had been made. So we were just late. And from that point on, there were all of these like passive aggressive digs, including passive aggressive digs about not eating enough of the lasagna. And that's kind of what I wanted to focus on because it was like prepared for us, really for him. And then I'm there and you're expected to eat a lot of it. You're expected to eat all of it, really, like, or at least as much as can possibly be had. But then in the same discussions,
yeah,
you know, comments about, have you gained weight? Have you like, she was commenting that he looked like he had lost weight. And then later it came up that her husband was like, oh, like she looks like she's lost weight, right? And she was like, oh, he's just being nice. I've actually gained a bunch of weight. So it's just like, this is how it all goes. And then day two, you get there and it wasn't just him. It was me getting like guilt tripped for not eating enough of the lasagna on day two. Hmm. And it just, I was sitting there like, I wish I could speak up to defend my partner. I wish I could defend myself. But it also is one of those fraught like family things where you don't want to upset the apple cart. We're not back there very often. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I had a particularly great solution for it, except that maybe now I'm prepared for it next time. I don't know. I felt stuck and I felt like there wasn't really a great way to navigate that. That wasn't going to upset people more than I think already had been done.
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that they're already upset, Michael. You didn't eat your lasagna. They're already upset. It's already right. Your fault. You're not going to, and even if you started eating, they're still mad at you for having to remind you. So
I did. It just wasn't a large enough portion.
That's what I'm saying. Mm. What I'm saying is that they're already upset. You're not saving anything by shutting up. Mm-hmm.
I mean, so my grandma on my mom's side, very much there was a thing of like, no matter, especially like with food, like with anything, but like with food, it's like, it's either too much or too little.
Right.
Like it is you can never get it right.
Yeah. It's never correct.
And yeah. With a gift, it was either too much or too little. And like it, I don't know, gave a lot of neurosis to my mom and her sisters. My mom was actually like, you know, so I mentioned like, there's been stuff going on. My mom is kind of entering a new stage of life and has been very retrospective as part of that. And like talking a lot about
really
her mom and like thinking about her relationship with her mom. And she said something recently, like in one of our last calls about like, you know, I would like, I just tried my best with my mom and just, we couldn't get along. And like, you know, she was talking about when she was like in high school that, you know, she would put together like outfits and she's like, you know, I'd put together these get-ups and everyone would always compliment me on them. But I remember coming down the stairs and my mom saying, you know, you look like a sausage.
Oh my God.
And just, you know, immediately, you know, I'd feel good when I was in my room and then coming down the stairs, she would immediately dump on me and just like make me feel bad. Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that my mom was, you know, because I was a fat kid, my mother was perfectly fine. I mean, really, given the stigma of, you know, having a fat kid in the 70s, she was pretty okay with that. And I pretty much got to eat whatever I wanted, but not my father. My father was the guy who said like, oh my God, you look like a stuffed sausage in those pants.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that vividly to this day. You know, I was 8 years old. My issues always came from dad, really not mom. My issue with mom, I just put her through hell with my, you know, what I wanted or didn't want to eat. I had bizarre
eater.
There were just things I didn't like. Like I didn't like stuffed green peppers because of the green peppers. But I love giblets and rice, you know,
like all kids,
yeah. Like all kids. I hated asparagus. And she was her favorite vegetable. But I liked spinach, you know, it was weird. I just had weird tastes, it's not that she didn't try to accommodate it. I was an only child. It wasn't hard to accommodate one other person. But I just think she was focused on, I'm going to make healthy meals for our family of two. And I was very unsympathetic to that challenge.
Yeah. It's interesting. My mom, I don't remember getting any direct, you know, fat phobic sort of shaming things from my mom. I don't think she ever really did that, but she was always very, the food that I serve my kids is going to be really healthy. I want to make, you know, there's a lot of like health focused things that, you know, we're very trendy in the 90s, and that's kind of where her was vegan for a year and then vegetarian after that point. But my dad was the one that I remember a lot of comments coming from, not about any of us, I don't think, but I just remember him talking about fat people that might be seen out in public, mm-hmm. or somebody, like if somebody like cut him off while we were driving, he would call them some kind of, you know, fat, lazy slob slur thing without even seeing who it was driving. So it was just like this omnipresent fat is means bad. Fat means
they're a bad person, therefore they must be fat.
Exactly. Right. And you know, so that's bad enough. I mean, I suppose it's better than having it aimed directly at me, but it definitely, I don't think it's an accident that I'm where I'm at now, is what I'm saying.
My mom would, you know, so she had that neurosis from her own mother. So she tried not to directly, I feel like, say a lot of body related stuff to us. I mean, occasionally it'd be out, but like physically or appearance wise, there wasn't. But retrospectively, there was a lot about like ability, in terms of like, oh, you would like, you know, you're being lazy, or like, you know, there was one thing where we were at a pumpkin, like a real pumpkin patch, not one of these like, you know, straw on the ground and they just like haul in the pumpkins and put them down. Like my mom and I drove a couple hours and went to a pumpkin patch, and they're like, okay, you know, and you bring your own gloves and like a knife or scissors to cut the pumpkins off the vines. And like, you can take, I think, as many as you want, but you have to do all the hauling.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's me and my mom is out cutting pumpkins. And I was like, the car was full of pumpkins, and I'm like just exhausted. And I'm like,
well, pumpkins are fucking heavy.
That's right. Yeah.
And I'm like, can we go home like this? I think we have enough pumpkins. And my mom was like a little man, like probably maybe in the midst of an episode. I don't really remember why we were getting so many pumpkins. And she just turned around and she's like, you wouldn't be huffing and puffing so much if you didn't spend so much time on the computer.
And there's a lot of stuff that brings back like, so many memories. Oh my God. Being on a computer was lazy.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a sin.
And like there was a summer where she would lock me out of the house every day for a couple hours.
Ooh.
And like, just that like, sucks. She called it Trevor's Great Adventures.
How did Trevor feel about that?
The first week, I think I would just like end up taking my bike to the beach and crying for a while.
Oh my God.
No. But you know, it's great adventure. It's great.
That's fun. It's fun adventure.
And also
times.
Like, who can use the computer now, Mom?
I am certain that is exactly why I have the professions and the hobbies that I have now, is that I was not allowed to use computers or engage with television when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, did I change that when I grew up.
You know, I got to say, I grew up with a bunch of friends whose parents did not let them watch television, right? And when they came over to my house, that was the only thing they would want to
do. Of course. Yeah. What you restrict, you encourage. Yeah.
I want to say, I think my mom over the years has made a lot of effort, particularly since the podcast has come out, to educate herself and to be better than she used to be. to the point that now I don't really worry about getting slimed by her. Not that I ever had to overtly worry about that before. I think my stepdad is more the source of like weird weight and looks related comments. So happy Mother's Day to my mom, because I think she has proven herself to be an open thinker in a world where that is not necessarily encouraged. So thank you.
Yeah. Because what it sounds like is that your mom and stepdad are just, well, that's the state of things. I mean, they're like, I don't want to insult them, but I think they might be normal or above. and then your mom, you know, got educated or something. You know?
Yeah. That's my mom. I think my stepdad is less inclined to do that. Basically. Yeah.
So growing up, I think my dad, like my parents knew I was fat and I think they knew I was gay at a very young age. Mm. And I think my mom hated both of those things. And I think my dad hated the fat thing. I don't think my dad ever gave a shit about the gay thing, really. But my mom was always a very conventionally beautiful woman. She was second runner-up for Miss Pan America when she was in her 20s. Oh, wow. And she was compared to her looks were always described in terms of like all of those beautiful women from the 1960s that were in films and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And then she got fat when I was about 2.
Oh, I didn't. I don't know that I remember you saying that before.
Yeah, she gained weight very rapidly after she had some medical issues.
Interesting. Okay.
I am convinced to this day that she still thinks of like becoming fat as ruining her life, right?
Oh. That's
when she started hiding from the world more. That's when she started going more into seclusion, not wanting to be with people.
Yep.
You know, and when I started becoming a fat child, I think all of the stuff that she was inflicting on herself sort of rolled over onto me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think more than that, I think rather than having that stuff be internalized, she made a point to externalize it so that she didn't have to keep it and, you know, and deal with it.
I don't remember a time in my life where I wasn't aware of the fact that my body was going to be a deficit in every aspect of my life.
Oh, God.
Right. And that was incorporated right down to food. And I think this is maybe of the time period, too. My father was fine with whatever she wanted to do with the food, you know, like whatever she wanted to do with me was entirely on her plate until it affected what was on his plate.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He needed to have, you know, steak every Friday. He needed to have his cake when he came up for the weekend. My dad was a commuter. My mom and I were alone 5 days of the week and then he'd come up for the weekends. And all of that had to be there. Or there was going to be familial strife, right?
Yeah.
Imagine living in a diet house 5 days a week and then a decadence house 3 days a week.
Yeah.
Oh, something I was wondering about, and I don't know why, because I'm not a parent. I don't know why I'm wondering about this. But maybe because I do seminars with a lot of straight women, fat straight women sometimes. Sort of the other side of that, like we all talk about getting, you know, people getting shit from their parents about their weight or about their body or about their eating or about whatever. And I keep coming back to the stigma of the parent with the fat child. And I keep coming back to what's it like for the beauty queen to have a fat child? What's it like for Arnold Schwarzenegger to have a fat son? Mm-hmm. You know, because that can't be neutral. That can't be nothing. Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's so close to home.
It's definitely there with both of my parents because my dad was an actor when he was young.
Exactly.
And my dad has some other interesting, like my mom accepted that she was fat and hated it. Right. Mm-hmm. She would fight it. My dad never accepted that he had gotten a belly. Right. Mm-hmm. To this day, my dad is like, he's 83 now and he's like, I'm fat. I don't know when this happened. And how do you live this way? This is so weird. I've never been fat. And I'm like, I remember him at age like 34, 30, like when he was like 40. Yeah. He had this big old pot belly and he never recognized that. He never, ever thought of himself as having a pot belly.
Hmm.
You know, so it's weird.
My mom was hyper aware because like her weight fluctuated so much throughout my childhood. And it was something that I think was, you know, very difficult for her. And just like, you know, I mean, I talked about the neurosis about it that she got from my grandmother And I think she like had the experience of being a fat child. So she really tried to not give that to me. But then, you know, I think there's only so much you can just do as, you know, a human being who has feelings.
It's going to leak out somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because if you're having this internal struggle and then you have a child that triggers your internal struggles.
And because, you know, she's actually like Michael's mom, she has really grown a lot and like has become a Lizzo defender and speaks up about stuff when talking to her sisters when they say like kind of fatphobic stuff. And I was talking to her about kind of, you know, the current push for fat children to have weight loss surgery or now with these new drugs to, you know, oh, how can we get kids on these, you know, Wegovy and everything. And that, you know, she would be confronted with this, like if I was a kid, not, you know, not like flop us into this time, that like she would be confronted about that. And she said something that came from a good place. But she's like, well, you were in fat, you were cute. And it's like, oh, that's so a very like, oh, and I kind of tried to unpack that with her a little. I think there is an internal struggle, and I think it really depends how much backlash you are getting from outside sources. Like the stuff that my mom really commented on was there was a lot of like looks related stuff, but I think it was just because of the environment we were in, and I was, you know, a little goth kid. Or trying to be a little goth kid.
Yeah. I also think, you know, even if your mother, let's say, has no baggage around weight, none, which is impossible, I know, but let's just pretend, right? And mom has a fat kid. And you know, the fat 15-year-old is saying, like, hey mom, I want to get weight loss surgery. Or the ex-husband, right, is saying, like, well, why don't we have our kid on Wegovy? I mean, our kids should totally be on Wegovy. Even if you have zero baggage yourself, there is so much push and pull in the world right now for what you should do about a fat child, including from the fat child.
Yeah. And we're talking about soft pressures there too. We haven't even gotten into like schools sending letters home about your kid being fat.
Or in England.
Doctors or...
Yeah. Or in England where they take away your children, you know.
God, I remember that.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of social pressure on parents to start behaving in these ways too that add more stress to the kid. And often with a kid, like what sort of stress control does a child have? Not a lot. Really, in general, the only thing they might have access to would be stealing food from the kitchen because that's something they can control.
So, you know, I just talked about my mom not commenting on my weight a lot, but like a lot of stuff around like looks and like my whole goth phase and everything. And there was a point when I was in high school where, like my mom, I put together some getup, an outfit. I think it was probably freshman year. I probably had like my red plaid bondage pants that were like,
I'm sorry, what does that even mean?
So like the red, kind of red plaid with little straps kind of connecting the legs and like lots of zippers and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Dan can picture it. Okay. I'll maybe include a link to these.
I'm lost. And do you have them today? Can we use those?
No. And I'm getting ready to leave. And I walk out of my room and I don't remember what my mom said, but it was something very snarky and like, oh, like, look at what you're wearing. And she had said a bunch of stuff like that. And I stopped and I was like, you know, I feel really good about how I look right now. And like, I'm really happy with what I put on and you just have to go and dump on me. And like, that's not fair. And like, you don't get an opinion about how I look. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I just walked out. And it was, and I feel like maybe there was probably some follow up with her later, but I don't really remember it. But I do just remember that like moment of standing up to that.
Nice.
My mom is really great now. There has been points where there have been conversations between her and I and kind of like head to head about my weight and everything and just her difficulty with it and I have the difficulty that I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
And then her trying to wrap her head around that and the growth that has come with that. She has gotten to a place now where, like, I don't think we'll ever have one of those conversations again, which I think is great. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to send out something like we've had a lot of messages out there for parents on like what not to do with your kids. Right. I want to send out a message on what to do with your kids. And it's going to be a little vague because I don't know how to do this. But one thing I realized was that, like, listening to this conversation and thinking about this over the past 2 days, one of the I do not know, me personally, Don, I do not know how to take a compliment about my physical appearance. I do not know how to. That's because I never received one until I got to college. I was never told I was a cute child by my parents. I was told I would be cute if I lost weight.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that created a long-term complex in me. I'm 50 now, and I still do not. I still, if someone compliments my physical appearance, I fall apart. I don't know what to do with that. I feel like they're manipulating me. We've talked about it on the show. Mm-hmm. That is also an origin from parents, and it's because I just wasn't accustomed to that, right? You need to learn how to teach your kids not just to be critical of themselves, but how to praise themselves, how to praise your children. And if you're finding difficulty within that because of their fatness, then you need to look at yourself in a lot more. Let me just throw that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Don made his point, and I've been spinning on what my version of that is, because it's basically the opposite, but I feel like also hit me weird every time, which was, you know, when I was a kid, particularly my mom and my aunt, but there was like a lot of times if I would see somebody, there was just a lot of comments about my looks that were very positive. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're such a handsome boy. And I didn't like that. And I don't really know why.
Yeah.
I think maybe it was just a fixation on my, it felt like a fixation on my looks, or maybe I didn't believe them. Like, I always felt like a fat kid, even if I wasn't. And so there was I don't know what's there. I've been like brewing on it. Like, okay, well, I had the opposite experience and I don't know that.
I think that would be a very, very valuable inquiry.
Yeah. Cause I also can't, well, I can, I'm better now, but for most of my life, I've also not been able to take a compliment. I feel like there's an ulterior motive of some sort that mm-hmm. the compliment is being driven by. Mm-hmm. And so I have to like work past that to actually hear it.
And I think a lot of people, especially people who can't hear compliments, are highly critical of any compliment to anyone. Like if I say, oh, Brad Pitt's really hot, there's this default like, well, how come you're looking at that? Or why aren't you praising his acting? Or there's this somehow like, you shouldn't have said that. Like you shouldn't mm-hmm. have said that. You shouldn't have commented on someone's looks mm-hmm. as just it's a bad thing to do. As opposed to, no, it's just a compliment. I like how he looks, you know?
So I think what it comes down to is like, it's not just enough to just not be negative, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be positive towards the child too. Otherwise you're instilling a deep neutrality and ambivalence in a child.
Well, you know? But it's a two-way street. Like, you know, let's say you compliment, you know, I don't know. Let's say you compliment the kid for, I don't know, because these things frequently go wrong. Like, wow, Johnny, you're such a fit young man. You're so fit. Well, now he has to be fit. Mm-hmm. now it's bad to be anything else. You know, whereas I think, Michael, you got into this in an earlier episode, whereas instead of complimenting that, you would compliment like, wow, look how well you did in your soccer game this afternoon.
Yeah. Like,
we're complimenting the work that went into doing that. You know,
I think the main thing is just like, to use some Gen Z slang, gas up your kids.
Gas up your kids. Yeah.
Gas up your kids so they got that riz. No cap. Yes.
We do have a tip today.
Yes. Yes.
This is, I don't know, this might be a Mother's Day watch.
I think so.
Your Fat Friend, the documentary about Aubrey Gordon, is available to stream on Jolt, which is a kind of like an independent streaming platform. You have until June 9th to watch it there. So it's available to stream. You can get a ticket for $15. You can also pay it forward and enter someone's name and email address if you want to pay for a friend, or maybe you want to pay for your mom to see it for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
I should say,
I mean, it is, I haven't seen it yet, but I can tell from the trailers, it's going to be an emotional trip. And also it really dives into Aubrey's relationship with her mom.
Yeah.
So I think thematically it's appropriate, depending on the kind of Mother's Day you want. It might not be the best
mom.
Yeah. I don't know. I also think, you know, if things are, if it's complicated in Facebook lingo, maybe that's a good treat for your mom for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Nice.
What do we got in Bitland today?
Well, in Bitland, since we were taking a stroll through Motherland, or Mother's Day, I thought we might take a moment to acknowledge some of the truly, deeply exceptional parents of the animal kingdom. Okay. Do you think midnight feeding sucks? Do you think saving up to put your kid through college sucks? Well, some of these things would envy you.
Okay.
All right. So, starting off, octopus. The octopus parent is one of the most dedicated, meticulous parents in nature. After laying thousands of eggs, octopus parents will spend all their time maintaining their eggs, cleaning them, blowing on them, and protecting them from predators, and never leaving the egg side. While it's doing this, how does the octopus eat during this time? One, they keep food in a pantry, sort of among their eggs, which sort of nourishes them. Two, they eat the eggs of other octopus in the octopus garden, where theirs are. Three, they eat their own eggs that don't appear to be maturing correctly. Or four, they don't eat or may actually eat themselves.
I don't know why, but four is ringing some vague, distant bell for me.
Yeah. I thought it's either they eat the eggs that they think aren't viable,
yeah,
or,
that was
or
my
they
first
eat themselves.
Thought.
That's what
I think.
Thinking.
I was going to say they eat their own eggs, but I'm going to go with four because that
I think four.
All right. So everybody thinks that. Yeah.
Same thing. I'll say right. they eat themselves.
So everybody thinks that they don't eat or they actually eat themselves, and they would be right to think that. Apparently it is not uncommon for apparently the octopus fathers tend to just die very quickly. And then the octopus moms do this. And they are so dedicated toward the eggs that they will actually eat some of their own limbs if necessary to wait until the last possible moment.
You know, if the dad's going to die anyway, that's a meal.
Okay, so this is a callback for our own episode because we've talked about Fat Bear Week. Mm-hmm. Fat Bear Week is a competition to see which state parks black, brown, or grizzly bears gain the most weight before winter. But we don't always get into why bears need to get fat, and it's not just for hibernation. It's also for reproduction. This is true of polar bears, too. Female polar bears tend to give birth over the winter, and during this time period will spend 2 months breastfeeding their young while completely holed up, not hunting at all. In order to do this, what does a polar bear do? One, store food in its den, which freezes and then can be consumed as needed. Two, double its weight before the season. Three, triple its weight before the season. Or four, polar bears do not breastfeed. Instead, polar bears regurgitate flesh in a red milk for their young, so they do not need to gain weight the way other bears do.
Delicious. I'm going to say double their weight and they breastfeed.
We're going with double the weight.
I'm going to say triple
the weight. Trevor's going the big boy route. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
We got one for double its weight. We got one for triple its weight, Dan.
Tripling your body weight. I mean, that is
if they were emaciated, I can see where it would be triple. if they were like leaning, no, it doesn't make any sense. I'm going to go with double.
All right. Well, you know, we have a long-standing tradition on the show that if you don't go with Trevor, you're going to lose. But
really?
In fact, this is not one of those times.
No, okay.
it's a little too good to be true, right?
Yeah, they do double their weight during that time.
That
period.
Makes more sense.
Okay,
that makes more sense.
Last question: the strawberry poison dart frog goes through great lengths to have kids that would put most people to shame. Native to Central America, these tiny half-inch frogs are wildly colorful with unique shades and patterns that include over 30 colors.
Jesus.
Which of the following is not a part of the frog's child-rearing practice? Which is not a part? One, feeding the mother's unfertilized eggs to the tadpoles every day. Three, raising individual tadpoles in their own locations that must be visited daily. Three, father frogs ingesting lethal poisons to feed the tadpoles necessary nutrients. Or four, carrying the tadpoles up and down trees to keep them safe from predators.
I'm going to say storing the babies in individual locations, like, you know.
Okay.
I'm torn on that one, because on the one hand, that seems silly. But on the other hand, evolutionarily speaking, you might lose some, but you're less likely to lose them all in one shot. Like if a predator comes along and eats them. So I don't know. That baby is plausible.
And I will say, during research for this, I discovered a lot of animal strategies for raising your young do involve moving the young every couple days.
I'm going to say ingesting lethal poisons.
Yeah, that's my thought.
Fathers ingesting lethal poisons to feed their kids. Okay.
I love the idea of the moving the babies every day, because I just then think of like pigeon nests where it's just like a twig on the ground and an egg. That's good enough.
So we got one for moving them and we got two for
lethal poison.
All right. And the correct answer is, in fact, lethal poison is the one that does not occur. These frogs are crazy. They literally haul their young all over the fucking forest.
No, but individually, that's weird.
Individually. And then the mothers feed their unfertilized eggs to the tadpoles. To top it all off, that is the only food the tadpoles will eat. They won't even eat eggs of other frogs. Like, they will only eat eggs from their own mothers.
These children sound spoiled.
I like how there's like, so I picture, like, you know, there's like the boy mom thing, you know, online.
No,
it's a whole like trend. It's like, I'm a boy mom, I do stuff like this. And like,
what does that mean?
That, like,
is it a boy that is a mom, or is it a mom two boys?
A mom two boys.
Okay.
And I like that there needs to be the trend of like, I'm a frog mom.
I cook six different meals for five different kids.
Yeah.
We move eight times a year and he never gets to settle down anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So, dear listener, are you a mother who has hidden your children in various locations throughout your house for their safety? Trevor, where can they tell us about that?
Well, we're on Instagram and Twitter as @BigFatGayPod. We're on Facebook at the Big Fat Gay Podcast. Leave us 5 stars there. Leave us 5 stars on your preferred podcast platform. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/bigfatgaypod. See the articles we talked about at bigfatgaypod.com.
Yeah, that too.
Baby. I was so close. I was feeling so confident, and I just dropped all my frog eggs. Maybe you're a little baby tadpole, and your mom has nestled you into a secret, safe little tree branch, and you're listening to the podcast because that's what frog tadpoles do. But oh no, there's a bird coming, and it's angry. So
it's, I guess, the fat watch eagle.